Welcome, everyone. You are listening to the official Rebuild Podcast with your host, Roosevelt Belton Jr. And in every episode, we seek to provide deep discussions on community, diversity, equity, and inclusion within higher education in the urban Metro Detroit area. And in this episode, these topics will be centered around student success and inclusion as I sit down with Rebuild's Director of Student Success and Graduate Opportunities, Dr. Shatina M. Jones. Dr. Jones, welcome to the program. How are you?
It is so good to be here. So very, very good to be here. Excited to share and be on the podcast. Podcasts are totally cool.
So Dr. Jones, you have over 12 years experience working in higher education with a focus on academic affairs, campus life, and student affairs leadership, you know, just to name a few. Given your history with academic affairs, how did you initially get involved with the Rebuild program?
So I am from Detroit. So I know a bit about Detroit and just different initiatives that are in Detroit as well. So I saw this really cool opportunity with Rebuild Detroit to do some different things that focus on student success and graduate opportunities. And I thought to myself, it really was something that would stretch me because I've worked with lots of students, right? So I've worked with students in a much larger context, but really focusing in on biomedical students and the sciences particularly, I was like, this could be really different and a new, exciting opportunity. So that's kind of how I came to this space of joining the Rebuild Detroit program.
And so as the Director of Student Success and someone with, you know, years of experience understanding, you know, what resources students need to succeed, how do you personally define student success?
So I believe that student success is when we have a nice connection and collaboration between academic affairs and student affairs. So in thinking about, essentially, we have this beautiful experience that is happening in the classroom that is coupled with an amazing experience outside of the classroom. So do I believe that every student is going to do something outside of the classroom? I'm hoping so, because that's where the experiential learning occurs, but also that a college campus will offer both, and that there is cross collaborations between both units to help with creating a holistic student and a holistic student experience.
And speaking on that, how does your position sort of directly influence that with Rebuild?
So I have such a beautiful position because I work on the academic side of the house, but as it relates to student success, it goes a little bit deeper. So we are looking at students and what they do outside of the classroom. We're helping them with just different academic interventions. We are coaching them as well on their academic experiences to help them be successful. And we also are building relationships as an extension of the university by way of our positions. So we're having really good, cool conversations about, you know, what makes our program exciting with the students. We're also writing about that as well. So publishing on this particular area. We're also being able to disseminate knowledge as well. So it's really cool because it's kind of like if you ever played softball. So there's this position in softball called utility. So the utility person kind of plays multiple places. It's like, oh yeah, one day you could be on first base, the next day you could be at pitcher. So that's how I consider myself with my particular role, because I am a person that's a connector. So I connect to folks on the research core. I also connect to student training core and the administrative core. So I consider myself a utility player.
Got you. And you've done well for that, you know, with your first year within this position.
Thank you so much. Listen, and we have so much more fantastic things to do. So I'm excited. And I think that this also is going to be kind of that next level of higher education. There's so much conversation and dialogue out there about, like, okay, is higher education going to exist? But I think that this and what we're doing is answering an age-old question, right? Which is, why doesn't academic affairs and student affairs have more collaboration? What does that look like? So we are essentially, in my mind, we're becoming a benchmark to show how you can merge the two and how you can do student success on a macro level.
And, you know, speaking of, you know, student affairs and your interests and your involvement in it, in 2009, you earned your master's degree in higher education in student affairs. Student organizations and involvement have been something that provided you, you know, tremendous benefit to you as a student and as a person. So why is involvement a critical component of how students can succeed in higher ed?
So listen, as a former student leader who did all of the work, okay, I did lots of work when I was an undergrad, I can tell you that student leadership and student involvement is honestly how I would have been able to succeed in my career. So learning how to run a meeting, I learned parliamentary procedure actually well before college because I used to compete in high school. So I learned parliamentary procedure. I knew how to run meetings before I went to college. So student involvement is really like that prime kind of experiential learning where you get to try things out. You get to learn how to work on teams. You get to lead folks. So people sometimes sleep on like, oh yeah, you was in an air quotes a student organization, but that's different, right? Because depending on if you're a part of an organization that's associated with an actual national organization, you're able to get some really good trainings that I would say people are paying really big bucks for now. And some of us were trained as student leaders, right? So student involvement also includes like doing actual student athletics. It has to do with the club, intramural sports. So there's so many beautiful opportunities that students can take advantage of that they can leverage after post-college, right? So how like... most employers want to know, okay, you have a 4.0 GPA, but what else do you do? Do you have interpersonal skills? You get that from learning how to work with people at student organizations. You know, how do you run a meeting? You know how to show up. What is the flow of a meeting? You know that you need to have an agenda. You learn these things as you are developing your skills within a student organization, which then helps in the classroom, because then that also transfers into how you work with students in a group. So how do you work with peers in a group? How do you learn how to deal with difficult folks? How do you have difficult conversations? These things are happening organically in student organizations.
Gotcha. So it's a focus on, you know, organic growth rather than, you know, you get a position and you don't have these things and you're trying to make it up on the back end. We know with trainings that sometimes you have to pay a lot of money for, like you said.
Yeah. And the cool thing is that you can have both experiences. You could have like the things where you're kind of making things up when perhaps you're making up your own organization. Right. So you have to go out and look deeper for actual trainings. And I will say, as someone who came through in the early 2000s, was in undergrad in the early 2000s, we had trainings for student leaders and organizations. So we had, you know, how to run an effective meeting. So there was so many opportunities that I would say now, kind of being again within a profession, there's a lot of people who I can always tell who was involved on campus and who was not based on how we interact in certain spaces. So definitely beneficial to get involved, to get connected. Even if you do one organization can be super powerful. You don't have to do 10 organizations. Find you an organization where you can thrive at and you can grow and evolve. And if by chance you have to kind of piece some things together, that's okay too. But just find an organization where you can stay connected.
And so bringing it back to Rebuild a little bit, the vision of Rebuild is to identify and improve the recruitment and retention of underrepresented students in biomedical programs and careers. In 2020, your doctoral dissertation from NES State concerned the success of Black women in STEM fields and HBCUs. For someone whose research interests align with Rebuild's current vision, what first got you interested in studying the connection between, you know, Black women, HBCUs, and STEM?
So I've always known since I applied for the program, I wanted to contribute to research. So I know that I want to be a practitioner scholar. So I love being a college administrator, but I also love researching. So for me, going into it, I actually wrote my personal statement on essentially I wanted to write about Black women. And I wanted to write about Black women because there's a lot of research that is currently out there. And there was such a focus on Black men and how they succeed in college. And one day I was thinking and I was just like, what about the Black women? Like, I don't want the Black women to become the model minority. And then as I was applying to my programs, there was this, these conversations that kind of sort of continue to happen that Black women are the most educated class. So that's partly true and it's partially false, right? So this was what research taught me. So essentially, Black women do enter into college at greater numbers than any other minoritized class. But if you, and we still are graduating at a slightly higher number. However, if all of this, the Black women that actually entered into college finished, those numbers would be drastically different, like much, 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 much higher. So on one hand, it's higher. And on another hand, depending on the context and the lens that you're looking at it through, it could be different. So that fueled my desire, right? So when you go into a PhD program, you have a perspective of what you want to do. And all I knew is literally, I wanted to write about Black women because I don't want anybody to forget about Black women, right? So then after much conversations, after several research classes, I narrowed my topic down to Black women at HBCUs. And that was the first topic that I had. And literally thinking about the success rate of Black women at HBCUs. I have a passion for HBCUs. I took a trip to Morris Brown and I spent my spring breaks at Morris Brown. And that was one of the first HBCUs, I do believe, I can't remember what it was called before, but one of the first HBCUs in the state of Georgia. So Morris Brown is, from a historical standpoint, is very important. And when they were going through their issues with accreditation, I had a cousin that was there. So I, you know, throughout that process, Morris Brown had a special place in my heart. So to my nod to Morris Brown, which I want them to continue to be a part of the conversation. I'm so happy that they are working towards getting reaccredited and it is looking very promising. That was cool. So again, I got into my dissertation defense, my proposal defense, and we all decided that I need to focus on STEM because I wanted to focus on high achieving Black women because the research field is kind of open as it relates to Black women, but I wanted to focus on a different population of students. And my, did I learn a lot. I spent some really good time at three phenomenal HBCUs, at Jackson State, at North Carolina A&T, and FAMU. And I learned so much from those women. I remember when I was at Jackson State, I was so engulfed in my research, I forgot to eat when I was collecting my data. And I didn't even think about it till well afterwards. So it was so life-changing. And it really, for me, was this is why you're doing this work. So I learned a lot from those women. And then, of course, here comes the position for Rebuild Detroit. And I was like, wow, what a way to blend my passion and to learn, again, getting much, much deeper into specifically, you know, a specific portion of STEM. But what a good way to see it live in action, right? So now at the Rebuild Detroit program, we're writing about the fantastic things that we're doing. May not necessarily focus on Black women, but we're looking at different minoritized communities and looking at ways in which this program has helped them. And I'm seeing it in action with the students that I work with. They may not be, you know, all Black, you know, Black folks or Black women, but again, I'm seeing it in action in a way in which I would say for me honors my participants in my study in a way in which it blends both my passion for students and my passion for lifting the different minoritized communities.
Got you. And that's an excellent perspective to have. You know, we were talking about, you see the, you know, the end result from your past dissertation, and now you yourself are so working to implement, you know, the future as far as high achievement between, you know, minorities and the specific field.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's like you're seeing it all live in action.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, talking about your study a little bit, your study noted that while, you know, Black women excel in higher education, they often do so in spite of challenges that the average student does not face. So for someone who's concerned with student success, what are some of the key ways you noted that often help Black women and possibly other minority students overcome these challenges?
So I'm going to tell you one of the number one things was someone from back home. So one of the things from my study was it was their moms, or it was, in their words, their aunties. It was their mom, their aunties, their g-mas. It was somebody at home who was pushing them. And in some instances, they had no idea what they were pushing their babies to. All they knew is that they wanted them to graduate from college. So they were pushing them in a way in which they were providing them with support. Another thing was also friendships. So friendships that they had, they have friends who became family. So family, friends, and more specifically moms. And I had one student who was actually raised by her father, but essentially her stepmom was just as instrumental. So it was that community that they found. Also, another piece was resources. So resources as such as the library, there was a financial aid advisor who went way beyond to make sure that the students were there. And then also just different organizations where they were able to find sisterhood, whether that was a sorority, one of the historically Black sororities, or whether that was an organization on campus. These women were able to find and make connections with individuals and find community, either, you know, through staff or actually being able to make connections with individuals at home. So that is how they were able to succeed in college. And there's also research and data that's out there that supports a sense of belonging comes from community building, as well as outside networks. There's a piece of like different sister circles, sister circles, and sister circles can also be used as a methodology, but there's actually groups who are centered around sister circles. So looking at those pieces, those things are very helpful in having specifically Black women succeed, and also different minoritized communities. It's also helpful for their success as well. Is building community, having folks that they can connect to when they get on campus, as well. And again, those friendships, because those friendships are just organic. It's the people who you meet in the residence halls rooms, right? So maybe somebody who's one of your floor mates. So really being able to, you know, have folks that will help connect you while you're on campus. Some of the upperclassmen are noted as well. So again, and I know we've been talking about student organizations, but student organizations was a key piece, at least for me. Student organizations, and I did have students, because within the HBCU culture, we call them majorettes, but they have different names at different institutions. But essentially majorettes, a lot of their teams, their cheer sisters, majorette sisters, organizations, that was huge, because that's how they were able to create their identity as well as to evolve.
All right, Dr. Jones, just wrapping this up, you know, we talk about community, connection, student organizations. Now that in-person learning is slowly becoming possible and campuses are open up again, what do you have to say to students who are, you know, possibly coming back to campus for the first time and looking to get reconnected and involved with their fellow students?
So I would always say, stay safe. So if you are one of the student leaders who are out there, if there's still a way for you to meet virtually, still meet virtually. If you are in a space and place where you can actually come on campus, if the room says the maximum is 6%, six people, don't push it with seven people. Continue to practice the 6 feet. I still think that we're still in a pandemic, so we're still getting on the side of this thing. So everyone doing their part is crucial. I also would also say, again, if you are a student leader, you know, if somebody comes to you and says, you know, I don't feel comfortable doing these things, don't say, well, you have to resign. Because oftentimes it's like, oh, you just need to get over it, right? And sometimes that feels a little bit personal. But how can we come up with a solution? So if you have a person who doesn't want to come and participate on campus, how much more effort would it take you to create a Zoom for them to be a part of it? How much more effort would it take to have, you know, some meetings on campus versus some meetings not on campus? So having a hybrid model for your organization, thinking through, you know, what is the risk associated with this? Because sometimes we don't think about that. Sometimes it's like, we want to have our event because our event normally happens every year. We want to have it. We're in person. They said we can have it. Even if it's 46 people, we can do it with 46 people. But looking at the quality of that, and then also looking at your legacy as a group, as well as your legacy as a leader. What do you want to be known for? What do you want to be known as the leader who was like, oh yeah, we could have had a virtual, but because, you know, little Shatina didn't like the other person, we had to do it this way. So what do you want to be known for? Do you want to be known for the kind leader? Do you want to be known for the leader who empowers others to act? So thinking through those things is important. And also, as always, refer and connect to your advisor to see what's going to be best, because this is all something that is still very new that we're all still trying to figure out. This will be our new norm for at this point. I don't think we'll ever go back to what we perceive as normal, but this is where we're at. So really being able to connect and listen to others, listen to your membership, and do things that keeps folks safe, as well as and still, you know, listening and hearing other people's thoughts and perspectives.
Shatina M. Jones, thank you so much. You know, we're looking forward to possibly doing this again, but, you know, whatever you have involved with this organization, you know, we're glad to have you, and thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, it was a pleasure being here and connecting with you today.